Hey everybody, it's Diane, and it is Thursday, January 8th. Happy New Year. I'm with the 1 o'clock group. We got Jennifer and Larry so far, and why don't we start with a quick check-in and see how everybody's vacations and holidays went and how everybody was doing with perspective shifting over the last couple of weeks. Who wants to start?
Neither of us, I guess.
overall, the break went pretty well. Part of that was because my son got a computer, which he did not have for the first half of the year because he kept abusing computers and adding viruses on them. And just, you know, it was a lot of trouble for him to have a computer. But being, you know, a sophomore in high school, reality is that it's not like, you know, when they're five, they really do kind of have to have a computer at their, you know, accessible to them. So it's also one of those things where sometimes it's helpful to give them something so you can have, you know, so you can take it away if you need to. We had kind of gotten to a point where there wasn't a whole lot of stuff to balance behavior with. Not that I like taking things away, but or things that they can earn as well. So we've started this last week actually on a pretty good note. I'm cautiously optimistic.
Awesome. Well, you're in good company on the whole computer and virus thing. We have the same problem at our house, and when you solve it, please let me know because I will be interested to hear what you come up with.
Yeah, I don't know.
Larry, what about at your place? How are things going generally and over the break?
Could have been better, could have been worse, I guess. But we have trouble with Lauren not doing what she's supposed to do. And if her time isn't structured 100%, she'll always divert back to doing what she likes, which is her crafts. I mean, it's not bad. It's not that, you know, she's on the computer playing games all day. But she has little containers, and she cuts ribbons, colored paper, advertisements in magazines that, you know, we're going to recycle. And she'll just cut these little squares and put them in her containers, and then she makes, like, mosaic pictures out of them. But if you're not on her to get things to do things, she could do that 24 hours a day and not even sleep.
Yeah.
So
so that's her hyper focus. It sounds like is the crafting rather than the internet that some of us are dealing with. What have you guys been trying in terms of helping her to create a little bit more structure in those moments?
Well, we try and time everything, which Katie's a lot better at than I am. Because when the timer goes off, Katie will actually come and supervise and make sure she's doing the next thing. I'll just yell up and ask her, and she'll tell me, yeah, she's doing it, but she's actually not. So I have to get a little better at visually supervising what she's doing.
Yeah, no, I have a Dr. Phil moment, Larry, and I'm tempted to say, so how's that working for you?
Well, I need to improve on it, but it's
hard. I mean, hard because it takes a level of focus and consciousness on your part. And if you're like, you know, the rest of us, that sort of, oh, gosh, I've got to remember that in 15 minutes I've got to go up and check and make sure that they've done whatever they've said that they've done is
right.
One more thing to add to our list. And so sometimes it's really hard to do that. Have you been doing anything like a reminder or a timer or something for you to?
Yeah, no, we have timers. But my other problem is when I go up to her room, she immediately says, get out of my room. You know, she's 12 and a half. So, I mean, we hear things like that from parents that kids don't have ADHD. So it's hard to tell, you know, what it is. But Katie seems to have a little better success with that. She doesn't pull that on her, but to me it's always get out of my room, and I tell her, no, I can't. I have to make sure you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, and we get into a little tiff over
this might be a good thing, Larry. I'm going to plant a seed. This might be a good, we're going to talk about curiosity today. So this might be a good scenario to get a little curious about as we take aim and move into the next part of our call today. So I'll just plant that seed and say hello to Patty. Hi, Patty. Happy New Year.
Hi. Happy New Year to you, too.
You want to just do a quick check-in? We got Jennifer and Larry on the line as well. How have things been going over the holiday and the break and at your house generally?
Well, during the holidays, we had gone to visit our family, so it was certainly easier to manage our daughter just because she was so busy with cousins and, you know, in a crowd that it was actually mellow for us. Her therapist had asked her to come up with a plan since she has one semester left of high school and then off to college to play sports, and we're concerned about her weight gain and not being in shape for her school. And it literally has been like pulling teeth to try to get her to write a plan. This week, being back to school, she said she was going to work out on, you know, every day, and I think we're maybe 2 for 3 or 1 for 3 this week so far. So it's just really frustrating. And, you know, as I read the little paragraph here about curiosity, I really don't know what's going on inside and what is it that's not motivating her, or is it motivating or not motivating her to do nothing? I just don't understand.
Yeah. So there's a big disconnect because you're not really even sure what is going on with her. So it sounds like that might be a good place for you to take aim this morning. I'm saying morning because it's still morning where you are. This afternoon, as you're thinking about this. So when you set a plan, is it a plan for finishing the semester? Is it a workout plan? I'm not sure I understand what it is that she's, this plan is.
The therapist, my husband and I had proposed to her, hey, you know, let's have a calendar and just map out. It doesn't have to be set in stone, but let's have a plan with some goals in mind or where you need to be at in June in respect to, you know, being in shape for school. And her grades, she's been doing well with her grades, so we're not really concerned about that, thank God. And, you know, she just thought, you know, anything that we have to say, we're crazy, and she wants to oppose anything, my husband and I say, even though we both happen to be coaches of her, of what she does, and experts in it. So the therapist thought, what a great idea, you need to do it, and, you know, when it's coming from somebody else, then all of a sudden it does make sense, but even with that, she's struggled to sit down and put it on paper or commit to anything that she says she's going to do.
Okay. So does that feel like something you want to take aim on today, Patty, this idea of how to get her going to create a plan?
Absolutely.
Okay. Larry, what about you? Where do you want to take aim?
You
might have put us on mute.
Yeah, I did. I'm sorry. I put it on mute. I'd like to take in where I go up and talk to Lauren and at her room without her telling me to get out of here.
Okay. Great. And then, Jennifer, what about you? Where do you want to take aim?
You know, I'm not sure because we're actually going through a good patch right now. And
yay.
I know. I'm like hesitant to like really enjoy it though, because I know there's always like I'm afraid, you know, I don't know what it would look like for this to last, like, you know, into the future for a long period of time at this point. So
can I make a suggestion?
Maybe just being optimistic is my taking aim.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, no, and I guess the question is, so is if we're going to talk about curiosity, is this an opportunity to kind of really take aim on what is it that you could do that would make this more sustainable to keep the positive momentum going.
Okay.
Pat, what do you think of that?
That sounds good.
Okay. So we're talking about curiosity. We're on page 34. I'm writing down what Jennifer just said, or what I did, we just talked about. So we're talking about curiosity, and curiosity is a wonderful, wonderful tool to use in a lot of different situations. And it's a great way to really shift your focus. And in my mind, it kind of is a build on some of the conversation we had last time about perspective, because if you get curious, it can help you to open up to different perspectives that you might not have been able to. And so there's a few times that we tend to get stuck or that curiosity can be really powerful in terms of helping us with. One is really in just understanding what's going on from your child, either developmentally or from an executive function perspective. When we talk about the kind of whole, is it naughty or is it neurological, if you get curious and really try to understand what's going on from a biology perspective on their brain, it can really be a good way to understand the what's really going on systematically for them and enable you to look at things a different way. The other time that curiosity can be really helpful is a way to avoid conflict. So we talked about triggers a couple of sessions ago and about how, you know, once you reclaim your brain, the next step after, you know, knowing your triggers, reclaiming your brain, the third step is choosing another perspective. And sometimes it's really hard to find another perspective because we're so locked in. It's like if we think our child's being disrespectful and something's happened and we got triggered because once again they didn't do X, Y, and Z that we expected them to, going all the way to, this other thing must be going on with my child is often hard. So curiosity, if you go from a place of kind of a more intense perspective to, what if I got curious about this, is sometimes an interim place to kind of shift you out of trigger. So getting curious in that situation. The third thing that I think curiosity can help with is we wrote this down at some page 36, but if you're in a difficult conversation, either with your child or with your teacher, and you want to try to keep things positive, so you get into one of those he said, she said, or she said, she said situations where you're just kind of at fisticuffs with your kid, it's like they tell you their perspective, you tell them your perspective, and you kind of go back and forth with that for a while, the conversation often gets stuck. So if you can, let go of giving your side of the story and start with getting curious about more about their story, it shifts the energy in the conversation. So your child says, I don't want you to be in my room, this is my room, and instead of saying, it's my right to be in your room, and Larry, I'm totally making this up, but it's my right to be in your room, I need to check on you, I need to help you, you can say, well, gee, sweetie, it sounds like you really want some privacy right now. What's going on? You know, so if you can, and that's my language, obviously, Larry, not yours, but it's like if you can go to a place of curiosity, it might pull more out of the conversation with your child than what we often get stuck in, which is a kind of a more of a back and forth. It can also help not just with our kids, but with other adults that we work with our kids. So I find we talked a lot in one of the other calls this week about teachers. And if you've got a teacher who really just doesn't understand your kid and is giving them a hard time and maybe isn't following through on a 504 or, you know, it's just really kind of not getting your child, really spending some time to get curious can help you figure out, well, what is it that might be going on for this teacher? Sometimes we get curious in our own head and we just ask the question of ourselves. Sometimes we get curious actually with the other person and say, like I said with the daughter, you know, what's going on with you? And sometimes we get curious about what's going on with us. So it's kind of like, you know, it might be that you need to get curious about what's going on with you in this moment. So if you're getting triggered and you can feel that you're starting to get frustrated or yell, you can get curious and say, well, gee, what's really going on for me? most that those of you that are on the call today have older kids, but I know that with younger kids, particularly who aren't as emotionally aware of what's going on with them, getting curious out loud. You know, if you notice your kid getting triggered a lot, or you notice your kid is really frustrated or angry, highlighting that to them may be a way to kind of throw them into even more trigger. So if you say, gee, you seem really upset about that, it may throw them over the deep end. Or if you just say, gee, what's going on? You didn't finish your homework. That may throw them over the deep end. So a lot of times it's easier if you focus the attention on you than it is to focus it on them. And the last thing I would just want to say is that when you're getting curious, the best way to do it is to ask open-ended questions rather than and to be active listeners rather than asking closed-ended questions. Because if you ask a yes-no question, which is a closed-ended question, it really doesn't often help you, because you'll say, you know, did you get your homework done? You know, if they can answer yes-no, then you're going to get less of less information than if you can find a way to ask a more open-ended question. So, let's see, did I miss anything? So, I think that to just kind of wrap it up, what happens a lot of times is we get stuck in judgment and judging something as bad or needing to change or needing to get fixed. If we can start with getting curious about what really might be going on underneath it, it can help us in terms of looking at things from a different perspective. So with that, what comes up for you guys around the idea of curiosity?
Well, I guess for me, this is Patty, since my focus is trying to help her get moving to make a plan, like the therapist suggested, is I'm curious about what is keeping her from doing that. I mean, I really don't know. So if it's something that I go and ask her, what's keeping you from doing it, then she's going to
I think it depends. Yes, she may get defensive, and I think that the challenge is, you know, and how much judgment she thinks you have attached to this. You know, if you were completely indifferent, so if it was something that she said she really wanted to do and she was really excited about it and you had a lot of confidence that she was really excited and committed to it, and she wasn't, but you had no vested interest at all. You know, so last week my daughter really wanted to do something with her friend, and then all of a sudden she wasn't. I could care less if she did something with her friend, but I could get curious because she didn't think that I was like, oh, you have to do this. Why aren't you doing it? Which sounds like more of a judgment, sort of a checking up on you rather than a curiosity. So if she's going to hear any curiosity from you, Patty, is a short answer. If she hears that as an attack, as why aren't you doing this, she's going to get defensive. If she believes you're indifferent to whether she does it or not, and I think that this is what you need to get really clear on, is this her problem or is this yours? And how much do you want her to do it? And how strongly do you feel about her doing it versus it being something she really wants to do that you're helping her figure out how to do? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I just then please advise me on what my approach should be. I definitely have come to realize through this program that if I can lower my expectations, I'm more sane, so, you know, I've come to definitely that conclusion. However, I do worry about the fact that she's let her way go and she's not in shape to report to school, and that's not a responsible thing to do as a scholarship athlete. So, you know,
can I stop you for a second there? So are you willing to believe that that's a judgment?
It is. Yeah, it's certainly my opinion on is doing harm to herself.
Well, because what I heard you say is that that's not something that a scholarship athlete should do.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a judgment. And I'm not saying it's good or bad to have judgments. I'm just saying that that's a judgment. Mm-hmm. And so whenever we go to a place of judgment, if we can let go of the judgment, and the question I like to ask when we get into judgment is, so what? So what if she doesn't exercise right now?
So what?
Well,
she risks the chance of losing her scholarship.
Okay, so what?
We don't have the money to send her to college.
Okay, so what? If you don't have money, what happens to her if you don't have the money to send her to college?
Then JC around here.
Okay, so what?
I think this, I don't know where. So what? That means she stays at home with us longer, and that just sounds incredibly miserable to me.
Okay. Right. So what you're really afraid of is that your life is going to be miserable because she doesn't exercise now. Does that make sense?
I mean, it's quite general, but okay.
Yeah, no, I know. But I think that that's the thing. And for all of us underneath it, there's often a fear about us that kind of underlies a fear about them. So it's just something to get. So then it may be because this is a pretty charged situation for you, Patty, that it's going to be difficult for you to get curious about it for a couple of reasons. One is it may be difficult, if you're like the most of us, Patty, it's going to be difficult for you to be objective if it's really something you feel very strongly about. And then the second thing is that if she knows you feel strongly about it, she may be defensive and may not give you a clear answer about what's really going on with her. So to answer your original question, this may be one of those situations where you have somebody else get curious on your behalf. And so whether that's the therapist or a mutual friend that you think she trusts, but it may be that the dynamic is just such that she knows you feel really strongly about this, and you have every right to. Nobody wants their kid to be living in their house longer than they need to. That makes anybody's life miserable. And
mm-hmm.
So since she knows that and is sensitive to that, you're going to get a very different response to the curiosity than someone who she's really comfortable with saying what's going on with her. It could be that she's terrified to get in shape. It may be that she's afraid that she's not going to do well in college, and she kind of is part of her that secretly wants to blow up because there's too much pressure to be able to be an athlete in college. I mean, I'm making that up completely, but there's probably many different reasons that she could be having a difficult time. Or it could just be that she's not motivated because, you know, you need to create a more short-term motivation for her because her brain is having a hard time getting connected to this longer-term motivation of not losing her scholarship. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, she thrives on urgency. However, when you're out of shape, urgency doesn't work because you can't really get in shape in a week.
Right.
Oh, and that's how she operates. She procrastinates.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's a little different. It's not like school.
Right. So I guess I would suggest, Patty, that when you, and I don't know when your next session is with Elaine, but, you know, can you find a way to talk to, you know, make this part of what you do is focus on how to create urgency in a situation that really is more long-term. And I think that so what do you think about the idea of having somebody else get curious on your behalf?
Sure, I can talk to her therapist. Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, Larry or Jennifer, what comes up for you guys in terms of curiosity?
I was so into your conversation that I can't. I've just been kind of focused on that.
Do you have anything to share in terms of thoughts with Patty?
No, really, nothing else that you haven't said.
Okay.
I can see how. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I can see how, obviously, this is incredibly beneficial to be curious instead of assuming you know why your kid is doing something. Because a lot of times we may be wrong, especially if we haven't been, you know, looking at it from a neurological difference that they have and just assuming that, you know, they're just acting out or being difficult. So makes a lot of sense to me.
So what do you think would be difficult about doing it, Jennifer?
Oh, I don't think anything is really difficult other than just kind of remembering to do it in the moment. To make that shift sometimes, you know, and that just takes, you know, practice and making it a habit.
That makes
you know,
sense. So it kind of gets back
being more
to
of an observer.
Yep, and how you're managing your own triggers and those sorts of things.
Right.
Larry, what about you? Anything come up? Either as I was talking with Patty or in terms of your own perspective on curiosity?
Well, yeah, but one thing with Patty, I'm just curious why the coach doesn't have a program to keep his athletes in shape for when they have to compete.
Well, the coach doesn't really have – they usually send stuff for them in the summer that they need to do before they report to school in mid-August. But right now, with NCAA rules, you cannot, you really do not have control of the athletes. I mean, that's just to protect the athletes from coaches, college coaches, overdoing things for their incoming recruits. So it's up to, you know, the athlete in their sport, whether they're playing club or school ball, to take care of their, you know, their fitness. In our case, our daughter's not playing indoor club volleyball because she's going to concentrate only on beach volleyball, and that requires a lot of self-discipline because it's not like a team thing where you report to a coach. That you have to program your own practices, and that's where it becomes problematic.
So I'm gonna redirect us back to. So I appreciate the question, Larry. I wanted to redirect us back to curiosity. So, Larry, what are your thoughts on curiosity? I'm curious what your thoughts are on curiosity.
Well, I'm curious why my daughter always says that, but every time I try to get into a conversation about it, she kind of clams up and won't talk about it. So,
What do you think might help her to open up a little bit more?
Well, she's really into Harry Potter, so if I could put it into a Harry Potter question, she'd probably take an hour to explain things to me. But I'm not too good at transitioning from one theme to another and trying to get what I want in there. So I have trouble.
So you mentioned that she's really open to she's more open to talking to Katie.
Well, not necessarily. No, she does the same. I mean, she'll just stand there and put her fingers in the ears and not respond to either of us. And I mean, she could stand like that for an hour if she gets, you know, in that mood. And you could talk yourself into a blue streak and she just won't answer you. She'll just stand there with her fingers in her ears saying, like, you know, it's her way of saying, I'm not listening to you. Just leave me alone. Get out of here.
Yeah. Well, so here's how, if you're interested, I can share with you how I would handle that situation. That
sure, I'm interested. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have a house rule that we find ways to talk about the things we need to talk about. And if one of us is in a place where we aren't in the mood to talk, that that's okay, but that we have to agree to follow up. And so if she's like fingers in her ear, I would find a way, and you can't do this when they're triggered, because the reality is if their fingers are in their ear, chances are they're triggered. So in a neutral time frame, it needs to be, hey, we got to figure out as a family how to handle this situation when one of us is in the mood to talk, but we need to have a conversation, because it's not okay to just shut everybody out. And yeah. she wouldn't like it if you would refuse to listen to her, and you don't like it if she refuses to listen to you. And so the question becomes, how do we handle it as a family when one of us is in one of those moods that we really don't want to talk? And so you make it about everybody instead of just about her. And I don't know if you ever get in the mood where you don't want to talk. But then you reach agreement, and it says, you know, it's like, okay, if one of us doesn't want to talk, it's okay to go and calm down, but you have to make an agreement as to when you will talk. And then you have to follow through. And so it could be that she decides, hey, I don't want to talk about this right now. I'm triggered. And she has to make a commitment for when she'll come back and finish the conversation. Now, at 12 and a half, she may not be emotionally mature enough to handle that, but that's really the stage that you're trying to set with her, which is it's okay to be too upset to talk. It's not okay to stay that way and to avoid the conversation completely. Does that make sense, Larry?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm.
So what do you think you could do with that? With Lauren and Katie?
Well, we don't have that as a house rule, so I think the first thing to do is to make it part of our house rules and see how it goes from there.
So how? So I got to ask, how many house rules do you guys have already?
Oh, we have a list, but I really couldn't tell you how many we have on there.
So I guess the reason I'm asking is because a lot of times, and I'm guilty of this as well, we have like 17 million house rules. And so part of what you need to do with Katie is to figure out, this is why we take aim. It's like, how do you really prioritize and what do you want to work on? And so if you guys really want to work on this over the next couple weeks, it may be that you need to let go of some of the other stuff a little bit
right.
in order to make this focus, and then you make it clear, and we've done that before at our house, where we say, okay, for the next 2 weeks, the house rule we're going to really focus in on is bathing, or not following through, or whatever, you know, or picking up your towels, and, you know, you kind of stop griping about everything else for a little while, and you focus in on the thing that you really want to see the behavior change around.
Right, I don't have
Does
a problem
that make
sense? With, but, yeah, it makes sense to me, but Katie has a big problem with, you know, like bathroom stuff, washing hands, you know, health things. It's like she refuses to let up on any of that stuff. Brushing her hair, going to school in the morning, even if she's late. She, you know, it's like she has a problem with letting go, relaxing some of those rules for a while you're concentrating on something else.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering, I don't know when you guys have your next session.
We've been really lax with that, and we need to arrange a session with Elaine.
Well, that might be something that the two of you guys talk specifically about, is like, how do you figure out how to let go of some stuff to focus in more specifically on others? You know, it's not forever, and it comes back to for me, the way I handle some of that stuff is I do what I did with Patty just a few minutes ago, and I say, so what? You know, so it's like your child doesn't brush their hair today, so what?
Yeah, that's what I say, but...
You know, and that's the exercise. Well, and it's hard. And so if it's working for Katie to focus on everything at 100%, but it's not working for you, then that's the conversation between the two of you. If it's not working for her, then there's a different way to kind of solve it and focus in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense, and that actually was the one thing that we discussed in our last meeting with Elaine, and whereas Katie had let some things go, and she did for a day or two, and then she said, no, I can't do it, this is blah, 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 and we haven't had another meeting with Elaine since. So, we need to get back and have another meeting with Elaine and discuss that further.
Well, and the thing is that it is hard to let this stuff go. I mean, it's really because it's attached to a fear. I mean, there's something underneath that, and I don't want to pick on Patty, but it's like underneath underneath this whole thing about her daughter getting in shape is a fear that she's going to end up on her couch and make her life miserable.
Right.
And underneath most of our gripes about our kids is some fear about something. Either it's like that somebody will judge us, that we're a bad, if my kid can't clean up his room, then that means I'm a bad mom.
Yeah,
or if my kid, or if I can't clean up my room, my kid can't clean up their room, then how are they going to possibly be able to get a job? Or my kid can't not yell at me, how are they going to ever not yell at their boss? I mean, there's some fear underneath it. And so it comes back to trigger management and finding another way to look at the situation that can help you to come to a different solution. Because if you're terrified that your kid's not going to ever be able to get a job, then it's going to be really difficult to problem solve around the current situation.
Yeah.
So with any of us, it's really, I find it very helpful, and I work with my clients on this a lot, is like, what is really your fear? And for most of us, it's these real long-term, out there, small probability sorts of things, but they're really, really, really real. I don't want to diminish them because fears are so real and powerful, they get enormous really quickly. And so it becomes about really helping figure out what is it that we're really afraid of and how to problem solve to managing that intense fear. So,
right.
So Larry, I got to ask you, because we're talking more about Katie's fear, what's your biggest fear about Lauren?
Oh, I'm thinking here for a second. I don't know if I really have a biggest fear, because she's a pretty smart kid, but and I think that she'll work things out on her own eventually, but we just got to give her some space.
So here's the opportunity you have, Larry, because you don't have that supercharged situation, and it sounds like possibly that your wife does. There may be an opportunity for you to kind of support her in managing what her intense fears might be. And that's the truth for any of us. And so if we can find somebody who we can partner with, who can give us some objectivity, you know, it's like I can't tell you how many times I'll have a teacher say to me or a friend say to me, your kid's going to be fine. He's awesome. He's amazing. He's brilliant. He's whatever. And it's like you lose such sight of that because the fear gets so big.
Right.
Jennifer.
Yes.
So what do you think?
About curiosity?
Yeah,
about
the situation, how you could apply the situation, how we could apply the curiosity of the situation that you're really struggling with right now. Sort of, how do I keep the momentum going?
Yeah. Let's see. I guess it's just catching things early. You know, if something starts to go out of whack a little bit, not freaking out when it does, just kind of, you know, trying to remain, just by saying, you know, you're going to be curious about something, it takes a lot of the stress about the situation, or it makes it less charged than just kind of reacting to it. So I think just maybe remembering to stay curious and keeps them probably a little more off the defensive as well. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's also how you approach them.
Yeah, good thoughts. The two things that kind of came up for me as you were talking. One is that staying in curiosity does does help diffuse it a lot. I mean, I think that we get so focused on having to fix something or change something or make it better.
Right.
And staying in curiosity for as long as we can gets us out of fix-it mode, which helps us to problem solve better because we're focused on the problem rather than the solution. And it sounds
right.
Sounds kind of opposite what we need to. The other thing that I would say is that if you get curious about why it's going so well right now, what would you learn?
Well, how to keep it going well, I'm thinking.
Yeah, so what is making it? Why isn't it worse at your house right now?
I'm sorry, what did you say? How is it working?
Why isn't it worse right now at your house?
Well, I think part of it is because he's highly motivated to, you know, to now use this computer that he didn't have access to do things that he wanted to do. He likes to do some, you know, animation and drawing on the computer and just, you know, having more contact maybe with his friends that way. And so linking it to school, I mean, he's at a point right now where he's very really kind of wanting to get access because he hasn't had it. And so it's making it easier to kind of get him to do what we want him to do, which is good because that just creates good feelings all around, which kind of reinforces what I've tried to tell him for years. You know, if you do what we ask you to do, then we're more apt to do what you would like us to do. Everybody's happy.
Yeah.
Things keep moving along.
I'm wondering how much of an opportunity this is, Jennifer, to really educate him a little bit about how his brain works. Because the reality is that the motivation piece is an ADD thing. And so the ADD brain without motivation doesn't do anything. And so if you can say to him, hey, I'm noticing how much easier it is for you to get stuff done with a computer because you're really motivated to get it done so that you can jump on the computer. Isn't that interesting? And I'm making this up, Jennifer, but it's like I learned this thing in my group about motivation and the ADHD brain, and I wonder how we could apply some of this to this other area of your life over here where you're having a really hard time getting something done.
Right. And, well, one of the things we've done is he is in he's taking a class this year called, what is it? The acronym is SOS, which basically helps them, well, it's supposed to help them, you know, remember to write in their agenda, remember to talk to their teachers about what they're missing, which sounds like a really good thing, but it's the only class that he's actually failing this year. Because I think it would be great if you just were never, like, taught those things but didn't have problems with these specific areas. So it's been actually more of a challenge. But so what we've just started to do this week with some success is, you know, is linking his time to the computer to, you know, how many classes he writes something down in the agenda for, because that was a really big problem. He just wouldn't do that. So, but lo and behold, no problems this week. Every class, something
written
down.
So again, so if you got curious, part of it is about motivation. But I know that at my house, when I got really curious about the planner and why the planner wasn't working, there were certain classes where it was really, really difficult to do it in, and others where it was easy. So we started solving to not so much how can you fill out the planner, but how can you make sure you capture all the assignments in each one of your classes?
Right.
Which is a different, so you solve the problem differently, if that makes sense.
Right. You're right, because we don't care how they remember what to do, what they need to do, just as long as it's written down somehow or it's captured somehow.
Yep. Okay. So any other thoughts on curiosity? Or the conversation that's been going on today?
I find that whenever if Dominique is having some success in some area, and if I relate it to, oh, I learned this about ADD and how your brain works, she gets very upset.
So what do you think that's all about, Patty?
She has no interest in, you know, improving herself or learning about, you know, ADD. One time, she was very upset at me because she says that I on purpose left a book about ADD laying on the coffee table, and her friends came over, and she was incredibly embarrassed, which she talks to her friends about her ADD all the time. I'm on my meds. I didn't take my meds. I have ADD. So I have no idea, and I know for a fact that I did not leave the book out on purpose. And So she's a
17-year-old girl, right? So there's some level of embarrassment that goes along with that.
She says to all her friends that she has ADD, and I take meds and I don't take meds, and she's very open about it.
Well, and my guess is that for most of us, there's times that we feel really good about something, and there's times that they're not. But I want to question something you said, because you said she has no interest in improving herself.
Yeah.
So on a scale of 0 to 10, how true is that really?
0.
It's not true?
Or no, 0
is completely true.
It's very true that she doesn't want to have anything to do with it.
No, that's different than what I said. So you said the language you use is she has no interest in improving herself. So if I asked her today, if I met her on the street and I said, how interested are you in personal development, in improving where you're at and doing things differently and better and moving things forward, what do you think she would say to me?
She doesn't have any need to improve on anything.
She would say that to me? She would say, oh, I don't need to get better. Everything's perfect the way it is?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the
very oppositional.
Well, so being oppositional is different. So this is the point. So there's a difference between what she says and what she really feels. And I think that that's a distinction that's really important when our kids are oppositional and when they're at that age where they're very oppositional, is because sometimes the words out of their mouth are really not what's going on in their head. And so it's important to kind of say, what if there's part of my kid who really does want to get better, and there's part of them that says that they don't because it's too much work or there's too much other stuff going on. And that can be a place that we can really get curious as well. Just because our kids say something doesn't mean that it's 100% true. Just like with us, you know, so say, oh, I hate my job. Is that 100% true? No. But how many times have we ever said something that significant? It's just really important to pay attention to absolutes and black and white, because it tends to trip us up. Does that make any sense, Patty?
Yeah, I mean, I just have learned to not bring up any of my education in regards to ADD. None of it. I can't bring it up. I cannot talk about it because it's like walking on eggshells if I say anything like that.
It does make it hard when they get triggered by a conversation, any conversation. It makes it really tough. So I'm on page 35. I want to do our wrap up real quick. So four questions: what did I focus on or pay most attention to? What's my clarity or takeaway from the conversation? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success with the action? Take a minute and jot down your thoughts about our call today and curiosity and what you want to do about it. And would love to hear from you guys what your commitment is moving forward.
Diane, one of the things that you said that made sense, however, I would like a little advice on how to do it and what exactly that could get me is asking open-ended questions.
Okay.
So
let's take some time So I'm trying to think if I might even have an exercise, Patty, that I could send you on asking open-ended questions. Let me find a note, and I will post something out on Facebook.
Okay.
Great. But open-ended questions are really just the simplest thing is that you want to make sure that you're saying, instead of saying, are you going to do something about it, which is yes or no, you say, tell me what you're going to do about it.
Uh-huh.
Or,
okay.
Are you frustrated? Yes, no. Tell me what you're frustrated about. So it's that simple, but I can send you a little bit more detail if that's not helpful enough.
Okay.
So what's your commitment in terms of what you're going to do moving forward, Patty?
Just do more of that, just because perhaps that will help me understand her behavior and her lack of action.
Right. Larry, what about you?
Number one would be to make an appointment with Elaine so Katie and I can go further from where we were, and also with Lauren to try to word my conversation with her to have her open up a little bit more. As an example would be to have open-ended questions rather than close-end questions to how she feels.
Great. Great. Jennifer, what about you?
So I want to kind of focus on where we are right now and try to remain curious about what's going on now, because traditionally this time of year, this like second half of the year, there seems so much can go wrong and has gone wrong in the past in this part of the year that has just like made me very stressed, and I've had to really like you were talking about, you know, how much of this problem is his, how much is this, you know, what do we have invested in, what they're doing and stuff. And there's a part of me that even when things are going really well, that are still like, well, but what happens if blah, 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 you know. So I just really want to try to focus on what's going right and try to remain curious about that and not worry about, you know, what's going to happen a week from now, a month from now, in June, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I can set myself up for success with this. Just by, I don't know, remembering to be open and curious and focused on the moment that I'm in.
How does that feel?
It feels like a big question, like, I don't know. What do you think? Does that sound good? I'm, like, talking off the top of my head.
Well, and I guess the question is, so it's sometimes a great intention, and I love your intention. The question is, what's going to get in the way, and how confident are you in your ability to kind of really stay in the moment and stay out of the future tripping worry stuff that, you know, tends to be all-consuming sometimes?
I'm not super confident, but I am willing to try, you know,
tools,
a new approach.
Are there tools that you've used to do this before, or is this kind of a new adventure for you?
This is going to be new, because last year I didn't have the tools, and it was extremely. Everything was just very, very stressful.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time with everything kind of like, you know, blown up and not working.
Right.
And everybody being stressed. So
what I would encourage you to do is to find something that keeps you in the moment, whether it's I use the word mantra, but it's like if it's a phrase that you say over to yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, the one that I tend to use. Yeah, so the one that I tend to use if I know that I'm going to get triggered is, I'm willing to consider that this is not a threat to me at this moment. You know, so it's like,
okay.
I'm willing to consider this is not a threat to me at this moment. So it's like one of those sort of, you've got to be willing to consider. It doesn't have to be you're fully bought in. It doesn't have to be all Pollyanna. This is going to be fine. This is going to be, you know, it doesn't have to be that. It just needs to be, I'm willing to consider that I can handle this. Or I'm willing to consider that the world will not end just because this is going on right now. Or whatever it is, it, you know, so if it's a mantra, if it's a post-it note, it's like, you know, don't worry, be happy. What, you know, whatever it is, it's going to kind of keep you remembering what your intention is, which is to stay in the moment and not, you know, get freaked out about what might happen as a result of, right?
Right.
How does that feel?
Good.
Because you're kind of reprogramming yourself, because there's this fear that starts to take over. And the reality is that our brain doesn't like the vacuum. So if we don't know what's going to happen, our brain wants to fill the gap and say, oh, you don't know what's going to happen? This might happen. So let's think about this, you know? And it's never
right.
The nice thing. So if you're gonna create a story, this is always my quote, if you're going to create a story, create one that makes you feel good.
Right. Well, I am familiar with asking, is this true? And does it really matter? You know, does it matter? Which often the answer is, no, it doesn't matter, like in the scheme of life.
Yep.
So, I can work with this.
Okay, good. All right, everybody, great call today. Just a couple of logistical things. One is look for an email you should have gotten an email, I think, yesterday that announced new calls that we're doing every month. We're calling them the Lifeline calls. You guys are all invited to participate in them. They're just Q&A. They aren't structured like these are, but it's just another opportunity to connect with Elaine or I, ask questions about how things are going, that sort of thing. The second thing is a reminder, the calls are technically twice a month, not every other week. So make sure that you look at the Monday emails and look at the schedule, because there's in the fall it ended up being like every other week, and now there's like two a month, and there's a couple of months coming up here that have like three Tuesdays, so it's not every other week. So just make sure you watch the calendar. And then the third thing is that we're going to be changing our phone call-in system. So look at the email next week and make sure you get the right call-in information for the call the week after next, which is the 20th. Thursday. The 22nd is the next time we're getting together. So thanks again, everybody, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.